Before we get going, here's the bit where I remind you that nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets. You're about to listen to a special preview edition of the Grant Williams podcast featuring my guest, friend and former business partner, Remy Tito, the brains behind The Mad King. Remy's work at The Mad King has been exceptional, and he's opening up his work for a free trial, which he hasn't done before, certainly not since he's launched the product, and I don't think he'll be doing it again at any point. So if you have the chance, go to themadking.com and sign up for a free trial. No obligations, no credit cards, none of that stuff. Just create an account and you can have a look at all Remy's work, which is stellar. Every edition of the Grant Williams podcast, including the Endgame, the Super Terrific Happy Hour, the narrative game, This Week in Doom, Shifts Happen, and Chaos Theory, is available to Copper and Silver Tier subscribers at my website, grant-williams.com. Copper tier subscribers get access to the podcasts, while members of the Silver tier get both the podcasts and my monthly newsletter, Things That Make You Go, Hmm. So, if you enjoy what you hear on the show and you want more high quality content like it, then please make your way over to grant-williams.com and join our exciting community today. And now, on with the show. Remy, hello, old friend. How the hell are you? Good to have you on the pod.
Hi, mate. Thank you for having me.
How are things in Spain?
Good. A bit of inflation, you know, but beside that, yeah, it's good. I mean, everything is expensive, really. Even here, you know.
But you've got good weather.
No, not even. even at the moment. No, but we had crazy winter, no rain, no cold, no whatsoever. It's been insane.
Well, there's always a payback. I guess inflation is the trade-off for good weather. Well, listen, matey, I'm so glad we got this chance to chat. There's three of your recent pieces that I want to talk to you about today because each one of them has been really, really interesting and so different. People who have followed my podcast and people who have followed my video interviews probably have seen the conversation you and I had last year on video, but I wanted to give more people a chance to listen to you because I think the stuff you're doing with The Mad King is awesome. So let's start with The Mad King. Let's start with the idea behind it and how it's going so far and what it is you're trying to do with The Mad King.
Yeah, so I launched it now a year ago. And that was basically part of my redemption arc after going into crypto and crashing like dramatically. Built it originally anonymously because I wanted people to judge the content rather than the name attached to it. It worked pretty well. I had to reveal my identity in September when we did the video with you, which is available on the website now. And yeah, so the idea is basically I'm doing what I've been doing for 10 years at GMI, which is simplifying complex topic. So normal people like retail investor, for example, can understand them, but also, you know, for professionals to just like digest information very quickly. The idea is to simplify everything the most I can. It's that simple.
You mentioned there the crypto arc. It would be remiss of us not to mention that. We don't have to go into great detail because it's all there in the video and people that go onto your website can watch that. But let's just talk about just quickly that crypto redemption arc because it was a hell of a story and it was a hell of a lesson for you. And I have to say, and I've told you this to your face, I thought you handled it absolutely impeccably. So just talk about what happened for the people that don't know.
2 years ago, I was a heavy investor in Luna and became very vocal about it on Twitter, which I ended up having an account with more than 100,000 people on it. Was a big advocate for Luna and what they were doing, and we all know how it ended. So obviously when that happened, you know, A, I lost a lot of money, and B, my reputation was down the drain. Basically, it took me about a year to be ready to organize my comeback, let's say, of sorts. And that's what I'm doing with The Mad King now, focusing like heavily on macro and normal markets, a little bit on crypto because you have to talk about it, really focusing on two or three big ones and that's it.
I've managed to avoid talking about it as best I can for quite some time, so it may be possible, I'm not sure. But let me just stay on that for a second because it was an extraordinary time. How did that whole experience and the kind of work you did afterwards, how did that impact your view of crypto in general and in some of these altcoins and the other stuff that's going on in particular?
First, I realized the impact of communities. I joined the community of Luna, which was my big mistake in the end. From a trade point of view, although I made some really, really, really smart people, you know, that's also why I trusted the project. I realized that everything was built on narratives and vocal communities rather than proper utilities, you know. I still have some position in crypto because I still have them from the old days. For example, I didn't take any part in the current run into Bitcoin, Ethereum, or whatever. I'm fine with it, to be honest. I think it takes a lot of your time and energy. It's very destructive and it's good. You know, a lot of people are making money. It's great for them. What I realized is I don't need to run after the easy money. I have skills to do it with my work. So I just focus on my work now.
I think that's actually a very similar mindset to me. But let me just ask you one more question about this and then we'll move on, because you said you haven't participated in this run, which is interesting in Bitcoin, because I remember you flagging to me before this run happened, Bitcoin's about to go on a run. We talked about it and you said, I can see the setup here, Bitcoin's about to go on a run. Just help me understand what it was that led you to not getting involved this time, even though you had high conviction. Were you just gun shy, or is it just change your level of interest? I mean, what was it that stopped you getting involved again?
Well, to be honest, I think simply because I can't afford to lose anything right now. Before, I could take the risk. Now it's not a risk I can take. I'm okay with it. Like I said, I still have some big positions on altcoin and stuff that will pay out later. It's like I'm watching it, I'm not involved, but it should be fine later anyway. And they were built during the bear market a while before I started to move away from crypto. So I don't have a choice. I have to keep them on. I said it to many people. A lot of friends in this run have made money thanks to me, but I haven't played any of it. And they all call me every time things move on. So what do I do now? What do I do? Hey, look at this, do this, do that. They all listen to me. They all make money. And it's good for them. Look, I'm happy for them. But what I realized with the Luna crash, I don't need to run after that money. Before, I had a bit that FOMO, you know, because you see everyone on social media and it's like, oh, you want it as well. And you become greedy. And that changed. I mean, I lost 10 million, something like that on Luna. So I reflected on the importance of money when that happened and what it means really and what I need going forward and, you know, all that stuff. So now I try to keep my greed in check, basically. And just like I said, really focusing on my work. And I'm not first. I didn't miss out. No big deal.
So interesting, because the more I've come to think about it, the more I find myself in alignment with you, because I remember Tony Deden said to me when asking him about Bitcoin, you know, tongue in cheek, because I knew it was never going to be something he was interested in because of his focus on substance of things. But he said something really simple, as he tends to do, that really resonated with me. He said, you know, it's just not suitable for me. And the more I thought about it, the more that was my approach. And so I watch what's going on with fascination. I just can't find a way to care about it because I don't want to chase after it. I don't want to go down that rabbit. I don't want to devote significant part of my time to staying current on it, and I'm happy for other people to make the money off it. So it's something that I've managed to stay away from as well. But the point you made there is interesting, and it comes back to something I've spoken to. I've been on a few podcasts myself recently, and this topic seems to come up all the time. You've talked to your friends about Bitcoin, you've laid out your research, you've told them what you think is going to happen, and that's great because you've been right. But it's interesting to me that they come back to you and say, what do we do now? What do we do now? What do we do now? And this was always my big problem with giving quote unquote trade ideas to people. It's fine to take your advice and go, if you say, hey, look, I think crypto's going up. But once you've got money at stake, it shouldn't be, hey, Remy, what do I do now? What do I do now? You should be invested in that position and you've got money at stake and you should understand the risks and understand the triggers and understand all these things. It just strikes me as one of the great dangers of social media and, to your point, communities, that people are so keen to be spoon-fed ideas about what to do and then don't take ownership of them.
When I started the Mad King, I didn't want to focus too much on giving trade ideas. And I ended up creating some kind of portfolio because I ran a survey through my subscribers and that was the most things on demand. And I did explain before, like, I don't like to give trades because timing is important, sizing is important. It's all personalized based on your own risk tolerance, on your own portfolio size. There is so many factors to take into context that I don't have for each person, right? I can't have them. And that's why I don't like to give trade ideas. And as you said, if you're going to get into a trade because someone gave it to you, you're not going to know when to get out. You're going to be scared to get out too early, which means if you don't use the information from your friend again, you're going to get out too late and you're going to feel down because you're going to let profit out. So it's a very complicated situation, the trade ideas. But yeah, it's something I'm doing a bit now, but I don't like to do it. The moment you have money involved, it means emotions and everything's changing. Everything is changing.
Yeah, and look, the Bitcoin price did what you said it would, but all those friends could have been calling you because it was down, right, if you got it wrong.
Yes, exactly. Well, look, when Luna went up, I had messages every day, thank you so much. Thanks to you, I made a lot of money. When Luna crashed, the same people, the exact same people, I lost everything because of you. I can't manage your trade. I can't manage your portfolio. You were up like 200 or 300%. It's a shame how you went. But in the end, that's one thing I realized also when in that crash is that trade thing that you give to people and all the emotional involvement around it. And, you know, right now, we're in the middle of a bubble run. If you have any, really, when you think about it, any newsletter that is focusing on selling your crypto, you don't need to buy them because it's going up. It's going up. It's going to happen. If their main portfolio is Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana, why are you paying for them? It's stupid, I think. And that's why, again, you know, with the Mad King, I'm trying to be more contrarian in my approach. It's really to make people think and sometimes offer different angles. So they have all the layers of information to take decisions in their investments. All that is, I see things now, basically.
Well, I mean, you've done a good job of that. And we're going to demonstrate that right now by talking about three of your recent pieces. And let's stay on crypto because one of them is about Bitcoin. You wrote a piece, I guess, maybe a month or so ago with some insights into the Bitcoin ETFs.
So, yeah, that was the day after the launch.
Right. So talk to me about that. And tell me what led you to write it and what you found, because I found it fascinating. I really did.
So the ETF launch, you had a big spike up and then correction. And when that happened, I started to look at the structure of each ETF, the fees and all that stuff. And then I realized maybe a bit late, I think Andrew actually was big on that, saying that Grayscale ETF will outperform everyone. And then you're going to have a rotation because of the high fees, which when I start researching that, I find his views. And I'm like, okay, that's good. Then I realized that we have those ETFs that are open on business days 9 to 4. But then crypto and Bitcoin is open 24/7, which is the centralized versus decentralized version. What I thought of is like, maybe there is some way to get information to trade it.
The full conversation is available to subscribers to the copper and silver tiers of my website, grant-williams.com. Nothing we discussed should be considered as investment advice. This conversation is for informational and hopefully entertainment purposes only. So while we hope you find it both informative and entertaining, please do your own research or speak to a financial advisor before putting a dime of your money into these crazy markets.